Okay, welcome to Coffee and Chatter. Today my topic is ménage à trois. Joe, Jill, and Camilla. Okay, what do I mean by that? Let's get into this. Okay, first I need to clear something up real quick. I've said quite a few times something that might be misleading, in that I've routinely repeated the phrase, I don't do conspiracies. It's come to my attention that maybe I was using that phrase wrong, and what I really want to say is, I don't do conspiracy theories. And there's a reason for that. Now, let me adjust this a little bit. So, it would be remiss of me, though, not to point out that there's a very, very thin line between conspiracy and conspiracy theory. Most conspiracies, in fact, start out as theories until enough evidence has snowballed, making the one-time theory undeniable, and then the theory moves into the realm of actual conspiracy, which is something that has occurred and has been or is being covered up by someone. For instance, the conspiracy theory surrounding the JFK assassination, and there are enough of them. Now, do I think there's more to JFK's assassination than the official story we're being told by our government? Absolutely. I mean, it's evident that there is some kind of conspiracy surrounding his death. But to date, none of the scenarios presented that I'm aware of have gathered enough evidence to transition from the realm of conspiracy theory to an actual conspiracy, other than something's being covered up. And believe me, I've entertained some very believable scenarios. All right, moving on. While I started blogging prior to the 2020 election, my social media presence on Facebook and Twitter that was actually starting to ramp up and garner somewhat of a following came to an end just prior to the inauguration of Joe Biden. I had made a pledge on social media that if I was wrong about the election, about the outcome, I would pack it in and walk away, take my lumps. So very early on the day after the election night, early in the morning, I guess, it became apparent that something stunk in Denmark. Some people say hope springs eternal. And I kept hoping that something would occur to blow the lid off what seemed to be very fishy. After all, George W. Bush was not declared the actual victor of the 2000 election for almost 5 weeks, almost Christmas time. But alas, it was not to be. As every hope of the election turnover evaporated, I finally accepted that things would stay as they were, at least until Biden was installed, and then, I don't know. In the end, dropping off the heavily censored Facebook and Twitter is what prompted me to add podcasting and video presentations like this via YouTube and Rumble to my blogging repertoire. All right, now that with the introductions out of the way, let's move to the election, which is what I want to talk about. Was there a conspiracy theory? Actually, it's not the election, it's the presidency as it exists. But obviously the lead up is the election. Was there a conspiracy to oust President Trump and install Joe Biden? It certainly seems that way. But it's still all conjecture at this point. In other words, it's conspiracy theory. Until some hard evidence surfaces, and it seems we're actually getting closer to that, it's all still just theory. But one wonders why election workers, most of them Democrats in key states, tried to hold Republican poll watchers at arm's length during the counting, and then why audits were resisted for so long, and now finally, why Attorney General Merrick Garland seems to think he has the authority to intervene in states' matters regarding the audits that are finally being conducted. What are these people afraid of? That's rhetorical. Anyway, while all this goes on, I'd like to take a look at what we got stuck with In other words, the Biden-Harris administration. Biden-Harris. I really feel bad that I've ignored them. That's why I'm doing this. So are we getting our money's worth? Or has there been an uptick in buyer's remorse? By all accounts, okay, Joe Biden seems to be asleep at the wheel. Most probably getting his marching orders from someone else. Kamala Harris has proved to be a disaster, so it's no wonder she didn't have any support herself as a presidential candidate and literally dropped out of the primary race before anyone else, including Marianne Williamson, the all-you-need-is-love candidate. Remember her? Finally, we have the unelected representative, Dr. Jill Biden. No relation to any real doctor you know, by the way. She seems to be a lot more involved in things than would appear healthy to me. After all, she wasn't elected to anything. Now, concentrating on who seems to be the workhorse of the administration, although she ain't earning her oats as far as I can tell, Kamala Harris seems to be the one. Some have opined that the job of VP might be one of the easiest jobs in the government, and that, my friends, is a very low bar. Many VPs are known for not doing very much, but Kamala Harris has reached a new low in that competition. While some VPs do little to nothing, Harris is on track at this point to do less than nothing. Are you surprised? Really? So, how come? One of the reasons VPs aren't trusted, so to speak, by the boss, POTUS, is that oftentimes the VP choice is forced upon the presidential candidate by the bigwigs in the party for one reason or another. With possibly the exception of Donald Trump, he didn't seem to take anything from anybody. He seemed to ignore the so-called party leaders, and boy, did they get mad. But I digress. The first presidential candidate that I became thoroughly familiar with was also an outsider like Trump, Ronald Reagan. From all I was able to ascertain, he and George H.W. Bush were never friendly, and Bush was essentially forced upon Reagan by the party that told him he couldn't or wouldn't, I don't know which at this point, win if he didn't go along to get along. So he went along. Following him, Bush 41's presidency was an anomaly. He had all the goodwill garnered by the two terms of Reagan and then rode Reagan's coattails to one of the biggest landslides ever and yet destroyed all that goodwill in 4 short years, making him a one-termer. Was his choice of Dan Quayle voluntary? I really can't answer for that. I don't know what Quayle brought to the table for Bush either. I don't remember. But Dan Quayle quickly faded away after the Bush loss. Moving on, I can definitely say there was no love lost between Clinton and Gore. I'm not really going to get into it, but I think that was evident. Likewise, between Obama and Biden. It seems to me that Obama, with so little experience, needed someone with, as they kept saying over and over at the time, gravitas. And Joe had the needed gravitas. Additionally, I can't comment on Bush and Cheney. As a side note, some used to say regarding Cheney's known heart condition that George Bush was a heartbeat away from the presidency. I'll let you think about that. And by the way, why didn't Barack Obama pick Hillary Clinton as his running mate? Wouldn't that have seemed like the logical thing to do? I mean, here we had the first black president. Well, yeah, not counting Bubba. And okay, he was only half black. And the first woman vice president. What a pick. They could have coasted on the adulation of the media over that historic first for probably a whole 8 years of Obama's presidency. And after all, the only thing Barry had to his name was that he rammed Obamacare down our throats without one Republican vote. Oh, also, there was that small charge that President Trump was a birther for talking about the possibility of Obama's foreign birth. But guess who started that rumor when she was running against Barry in the primary? Yep, definitely no love lost between the Clintons and the Obamas. I'm actually surprised that Barry chose Hillary as his Secretary of State. I can only guess that that was done under some duress of some type. And finally, the love-hate relationship of Biden and Harris. And I'm not necessarily talking about Joe. Remember how Harris savaged Joe during the debates? In fact, afterwards, as I watched Colbert, a clip from Colbert questioning her, he essentially sat stumped with his teeth in his mouth after he asked Harris how she could serve as Joe's second after the things she said. Harris tried to poo-poo it and claim, oh, it was a debate. He continued, her answer to Colbert's second question as to whether she had been genuine when she said those things, again issued forth in the jaw-dropping, oh, it was a debate. Colbert looked dumbfounded. Here was a vice president admitting that she had lied to get elected. Okay, they all do it, but they don't brag about it. You don't say it. Arrogance. So, Dr. Jill Biden, she didn't take it so lightly. She told a group of close supporters that Kamala Harris could go F herself, and she used the full expletive after Senator Harris had attacked Joe Biden during the June 2019 Democratic primary debate regarding his record in the U.S. Senate. And to date, the good doctor has neither apologized nor walked back her comment. Her response to any such question is that she's moved on. So regarding the relationship between Jilly and Cammy, it's fair to say there's no love lost there. Let's concentrate a little on Kamala Harris. She has now been given the job of fixing the border crisis by her boss, Joe. I'm not sure whether she laughed or cried when she heard that. Although she always seems to have a cackle for everything. I mean, from funny to the very serious. She will cackle. Maybe it's a tell that she's lying. That's my interpretation of it. Kind of like Hillary's little laugh. But Kamala's is worse. Some think the border job that she was given is payback for how she treated Joe in the debates. So it's been, what, almost 3 months since Cammy was given the task of fixing the border crisis? She hasn't even been there yet. Even liberals and the media dweebs are beginning to wonder what she's doing. She keeps talking about root causes. She kicked ABC's Lester Holt to the curb when he repeated in disbelief, but you haven't been to the border. To which Cammy retorted, well, I haven't been to Europe either. With a cackle. Nobody is really sure of the logical connection between Holt's question and Harris's condescending answer. I mean, who does Lester Holt think he is questioning the VP, who, by the way, is merely a servant of the people? When asked when she will go to the border to see what the Biden admin's policies have wrought down there, Harris has droned on and on about going to Central America first to find out what the root cause of thousands fleeing their homes to come to America is about. Ignoring the fact that Biden essentially said, come on up, there's free money for everybody up here. It ain't rocket science. Additionally, and this needs to be added, the people coming over the border are not only South and Central Americans. Yeah, there are people from all over the world coming across the border. And they didn't walk here or there to Mexico from Asia, Africa, and the Middle East. Now, true, while the lion's share of people coming across the border are from Central America, there are people representing over 100 countries worldwide joining them, walking from Mexico into the U.S. So what could be the root causes of all that? Finally, let's touch on how to deal with a crisis. And make no mistake, what's happening at the border is a genuine crisis, a humanitarian crisis. For instance, prior to Pearl Harbor, America was putting the pressure on Japan in a number of different ways. The ultimate end of that soured relationship is that Japan bombed Pearl Harbor. We were attacked by the Japanese, and I don't remember anyone wondering what the root causes of such an action were. Regardless of what those root causes might have been, we went to war with Japan to settle the score. Now, you think that comparison is too harsh? 2,403 Americans died in the attack on Pearl Harbor. How many Americans have died and are dying from the fentanyl being smuggled over the border on the persons of migrants in debt to the cartels for getting them here? How many thousands of our youth? How many terrorists with the intent to do harm are coming over the border, masquerading as migrants, Palestinians, Iranians? Are we in a battle for the soul of America? Some might say we're at war, and the worst part is that America's enemy in this case is the Democrat Party. No? Go ahead, change my mind. Hey, thanks for listening to Coffee and Chatter. See you next time.